Welcome to Pharma Docs with your hosts, myself, Dr. Jay Resnick, and Dr. John Robertson. Practicing oral surgeons bring you the latest and greatest in pharmacology as it affects you in your daily dental practice.
Hello.
Hello and welcome to Pharma Docs. We're sorry about the delay. John had a little some technical issues at his end, and we are all now we're here. So welcome to our episode number 5. Can you believe this is the fifth one already? Fifth time we've done this.
Jay, isn't this great? And I mean, all the feedback that we're getting from everybody, like, man, you guys got to keep doing this because, I mean, we're bringing the latest and the greatest out there. And yeah, we're also combining some medically compromised patients and patient red flags. So you're just getting just a conglomeration or a plethora of just, you know, various different topics that you use every day. Because yeah, again, we're practicing dentists just like you are.
Right. We're in the trenches. We are seeing patients every day in our practices. And we see patients with all kinds on all kinds of medications, all kinds of medical problems. And we've got to deal with it just like you do. And we want to share our knowledge with you that we've acquired over the years. So
let's dive in it, man, because I'm having some technical difficulties on my end right now. I don't know
if how long this is going to last.
Why the internet's acting up. I paid the bill. Yeah. But anyway, so our first drug is Livispa. All right. Yep. And the generic name, Jay, is baclofen. And this drug comes in an oral granule.
Yeah. Now, baclofen's been around for a long time because I remember using it in medical school and on my neurosurgery rotation.
That's correct. On your neurosurgery rotation, because I've heard people before, well, I'll just use it for a muscle spasm and all that as well. Well, it's used to treat muscle spasms and muscle stiffness and pain from a specific disease type.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what this new drug is indicated for, but it's been used for spasms and pain and stiffness in spinal cord injuries and spinal cord disease for a number of years. And actually, one of the off-label uses for it is to treat intractable hiccups.
That's correct.
Yeah. And, so if you have a patient with hiccups, but the thing about Livispa is that it comes in a granular form, oral granules.
Yes.
And that's unusual.
And it's not used to treat muscle spasms that we have from inflammatory or rheumatic disorders.
Right, all right?
So I don't want people
it's
out there,
be neurological.
Well, my patient's got TMD or TMJ issues. I'll start writing Livispa for it. No.
Yeah.
That's not what it's indicated for. And Jay, there's a lot of drug interactions associated with Livispa we have to be careful about.
Right.
You know,
because this is a central nervous system depressant, basically. So any patient that interferes with that or has the same type of effect, like antidepressants, any anxiety medications, sleeping pills, opiates, muscle relaxants, these things, it's an additive effect. And you can really get severe respiratory depression, CNS depression, and put the patient in a pretty dire straits if the patient is on baclofen and they take one of these other medications along with it. But the nice thing about Livispa is that it it comes in this granular form, oral granules. So rather than a pill for the patient to take, they can mix this with, they can either put the granules in their mouth and let them dissolve, or they can mix it with food or liquid. And so it makes the dosing a lot more versatile.
So now let's just talk about that. Because again, you know, we've been using like abbreviations and initials. So that patient comes in your office and, you know, they put underneath their MS.
Right.
All right. So you've got to know.
It's not a master's in science.
That's correct.
It's on the
MS
health history.
MS is multiple sclerosis.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's basically where the immune system just eats away at the protective covering or the sheath of the nerves themselves.
Right. It's autoimmune against the myelin sheath on the nerves. And basically what happens is the nerves short circuit.
That's right. It disrupts the community from the brain and the rest of the body.
Yeah, yeah. So the symptoms really vary, and they can be anywhere from incoordination of gait, diplopia, muscle weakness, spasms, pretty much everything you can imagine that would a nerve disorder would cause. And it's generally progressive. Some patients have sort of a progressive remitting form where they're good for a while, and then the symptoms come back, and then they get bad, and then they're better for a while. And so it's a very variable disease, and we see it in people develops in their sometimes in their early 20s to 40s. That's the most common time for this to develop, although it can develop at any age. And it seems to be about 2 to 3 times more prevalent in women.
Right, right. Yeah. Now, the thing about it, Jay, again, okay, so physical therapy, and there'll be medications given to the patient right. That's going to suppress the immune system. Okay,
right,
so
exactly.
During all of our previous episodes, you know, we had a little section, we talked about immunosuppressants yeah. And all that. One thing we got to be careful about as mm-hmm. dentists, in the event we have a patient with MS and we're doing an invasive procedure,
mm-hmm. yeah,
we're going to have a weakened immune system.
Right, because these patients are generally on cortisone of some type, an anti-inflammatory, because they want to suppress this autoimmune disorder that's going on. Now that the baclofen affects the effect of the disease,
yes,
the short circuit in the nerves, but to try to suppress the disease, especially if the patient has an recurrence, you're going to use a corticosteroid to reduce the inflammation. And the other medications they use are monoclonal antibodies.
Yes.
And so those drugs also increase the patient's likelihood of developing a significant infection after surgery. With steroids, you got to worry about delayed healing if Correct. You do anything surgical. And so when you have a patient with MS, you can't look at them as just an otherwise healthy person, because all of their, their immunity is affected, their response to surgery. And so we've really got to be aware of these things when we're treating these patients, because we don't want to put them in distress. And the other thing to remember is if they're taking chronic steroids, remember they're immunosuppressed or adrenally right. suppressed. And so you've got to supplement them right. with an extra dose of prednisone or whatever they're taking on their day of surgery.
Double their dose.
So they don't have an adrenal crisis.
Right.
So there are a lot of things to think about. And, you know, that's one thing that, we learn in our residencies is you've got to look at, we learn a lot about medical conditions and how all these things can affect our treatment.
So, Jay, I mean, that's a great point you bring up, because here we are talking about MS. We're talking about a weakened immune system. So, okay, what medications are you taking? They may right. not listen to the corticosteroid. That's where
right.
you, as the practitioner, you've got to say, are you on a steroid for this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because... again, their adrenals are suppressed now, and you go in there and stress them. Now you have an adrenal crisis going
right.
on.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, you see cortisone on there or prednisone on their medical history, but no mention of MS or any other disease, you got to ask them, why are you taking prednisone?
And how are you taking, how often yeah. are you taking it, and how yeah. long have you been taking it? So
right.
again, you've got a patient, if you're doing this invasive procedure, find out if they've got steroids. And then when you do this invasive procedure on this, you need to cover them with antibiotics.
Right. Antibiotics.
The only way you're going to get yourself in trouble with those antibiotics, if you prescribe something they're allergic to.
Right. Yeah.
And that shouldn't happen ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. That's an adverse drug reaction that you as a practitioner are solely responsible for.
Right.
All right.
Because you don't know.
That's right. If the patient says.
If you don't ask, you won't know.
Yeah. If the patient says, I'm allergic to penicillin, what about amoxicillin? Can you take that, or Keflex? Oh, I'm allergic to all of those. Okay. It's noted. Clindamycin or another antibiotic.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
And again, the one big antibiotic we always have to look out for is the mycins, erythromycin, zithromycin, because they affect the cytochrome P450 mechanism in the liver, and they reduce the metabolism of many, many drugs that go through that system and increase the blood level.
Absolutely.
So you got to be really careful.
Yes.
Yeah, when you prescribe a mycin for a patient who is has a number of these problems, or on a number of medications, you got to make sure there's no interaction.
That's right, Jay. And then we're going to have segments out there, Pharma Nation, on the cytochrome P450 systems. Mm-hmm. We're going to break down the five major enzymes.
Yeah, that sounds like a great topic.
But you understand about substrates, the inducers, the inhibitors. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so,
yeah,
you know, and we'll talk about, you know, about grapefruit juice and stuff like that as well too. And so it just makes you a better clinician.
Yeah.
Now, Jay, I know you've probably been keeping up like I have. Can you believe the number of drugs that have just been approved like in the last week?
Every day I get a notice.
Yes.
Eight new drugs have been approved.
Okay. And I mean, within the last week. So, I mean, by the time we get through this year, Jay, we're going to have close in the 90s as far as new drugs approved. So
it's going to be a big year.
So we'll have a lot
to talk about.
Yeah. How do you keep up with all of that? Okay.
Because
I mean, like I said, we're throwing great subject matter out at everybody and making everybody starting to think, you know, outside the box.
Yeah.
All right. Is that MS patient only on an MS drug? No, they could be on a steroid. Right. I got to be thinking about that as well.
Exactly. And you know, what's not really scary, but kind of mind-boggling is if you assume there are 50 new drugs a year that come out, and there's really more than that. And you've been out of dental school for 10 years. That's 500 drugs that you may not be familiar with that your patients may be on. And, some days patients come into my office and they're on some drugs that I've heard of, but I can't remember what it's for. I use my resources. I look it up, just go online. You can Google it. I use Hippocrates. I use Medscape. So that when I go in to see this patient, I know what the drug is that they're taking and why they're taking it.
Hey, Jay, just yesterday I had a patient in the office. I've been lecturing on this for quite some time about, again, the initials HAE, hereditary angioedema.
Yeah.
All right. So you got HAE, then you've got idiopathic angioedema, and you got drug-induced angioedema. Right. And the number one culprit there are the ACE inhibitors.
Yeah.
20 to 40% of a visit to the emergency department on with angioedema is due to ACE inhibitors. And I had a lady in the office yesterday that has drug-induced angioedema due to that. And
really?
I look forward to us talking about that as well, too.
Yeah, and it'll be a great topic.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, when I do this in my medical emergency lectures, no one had an idea about that, Jay. None. Yeah.
Really?
Okay, let's talk about our next drug and our interesting topic. Go ahead, say that name, Jay.
EntadFi.
That's correct.
EntadFi. Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
And it's a combination drug.
Finasteride
and tadalafil.
Right. And finasteride goes by the brand names Propecia, which is used for male pattern baldness, and Proscar, which is used for benign prosthetic hypertrophy.
Yes.
And so it's combined with tadalafil, which is Cialis.
Everybody knows what Cialis is. I just said ED for emergency department. Well, we'll use ED for erectile dysfunction. And we talk about erectile dysfunction, Jay. What causes that? I mean, let's see.
Hypertension.
Hypertension.
Diabetes. It can be smoking, alcohol.
Smoking, obesity.
Stress, depression, obesity. Yeah, so, obesity. High cholesterol. So a lot of men have ED.
About 25 million men. All right. Yeah. So it's a patient red flag basically when they walk in because, you know, why are you on this medicine? All right. Is there an outlying other problem?
Yeah.
And that's something we got to be thinking about as practitioners.
Right. So why a combination drug? If you look at the mechanism of each of these drugs, or I think if you look at the mechanism of the finasteride, you understand because what does this drug do? It's an inhibitor, suppresses dihydrotestosterone.
Yes.
And if you suppress dihydrotestosterone, you're going to have all kinds of side effects, depression, ED, fatigue, all these different symptoms. And by combining this with the tadalafil, that the idea here is to counteract a lot of these side effects that people really have trouble dealing with. I mean, nobody wants to have BPH and have trouble, you know, urinating in the middle of the night. But at the same time, they don't want ED as a result of the medication they're taking for that, or depression.
Right. And with the tadalafil, you know, that's a PDE5, Jay. That's a phosphodiesterase inhibitor number 5, yeah. Okay?
Right.
Now, yeah. There are 11 classifications of PDEs.
Yeah.
But the PDE5 is the one we're concerned about because, yeah. I mean, it does promote blood vessel dilation.
Yeah, yeah.
And smooth muscle relaxation in the heart, lungs, and the genitals.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah. Right? I mean, the way it works is it acts on the nitric acid pathway that leads to production of cyclic GMP. And cyclic GMP,
that's right.
That's what relaxes the smooth muscles.
Yes. And so the CGMP phosphodiesterase is the family number 5. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so any of those we got to be concerned about. So let's talk about why you and I are a little bit concerned about that.
Yeah. Or why should we be concerned about our patients who are taking
these? Anybody on the ED drugs, Jay, mm-hmm. we've already talked about how it relaxes the smooth muscles with the heart, lung, and genitals. All right. So should they come into our office and we start work on them, then all of a sudden they have some episode of angina.
Right.
Chest pain. Mm-hmm. What's our drug for treatment for that?
Nitroglycerin.
Yeah. That's correct.
And what do the nitrates do?
And they've already vasodilated the coronary arteries.
They're direct direct vasodilators. It doesn't even go through a pathway. It's a direct effect.
Now you're looking at life-threatening, severe, hypotensive crisis in your office.
Yeah, it's like an exponential drop in blood pressure.
Oh, correct. Okay, so if we talk about angina, Jay, all right, so that patient comes in, they have that chest pain. Our drug of choice, of course, is nitroglycerin, 0.4 milligrams. Yep. You can either do the spray or you do the tablets.
Right.
I'm a tablet guy because, that's right. Because with a spray, think about an atomizer. If you spray on perfume, cologne, whatever, if it turns on the side, you may clog that atomizer. And then when you go to spray or pump, you know, one spray into the sublingual area of the mouth under the tongue side, it may not work. Or the other thing, think about this. You've got a patient in there with just crushing chest pain. It's going to be a little bit chaotic in that office.
Yeah.
Are you going to be able to see, did I really give that spray? And you're sitting there just steadily squeezing that atomizer.
Yeah.
With a tablet, I can see it, Jay.
Right, you can see it dissolve. And that's why most people with angina carry their little bottle of nitroglycerin with them. And, you know, we'll come back to the interaction with tadalafil and what to do with your patients when they come in for a procedure. But if you have a patient who's on nitroglycerin, remember we talked about last time, 2 weeks ago, about any positive thing on the patient's medical history or on their medications should generate more questions. And you want to ask your patients with angina who carry nitroglycerin, how many nitroglycerin, or actually, if you take your first nitroglycerin, does that always relieve your chest pain? And how long does it take? And do you need 2? Do you need 3 to get relief? Or is it getting worse? Is it getting to the point where even after 3 nitroglycerin, you still have some chest pain?
Right.
And that's a patient that has unstable angina you don't want to touch.
So that's exactly right. So, I mean, like, hey, are you having chest pain while you're still on nitroglycerin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do not touch this patient, period. And so the thing about, Jay, on the nitrates, okay, there's about 40 different various generics or brand
any
names
nitrate there. Like isosorbide, which is used for hypertension,
Imdur, dilatrate, or if your patient might say, I'm on some iso something, all right, well, there's a drug called isoptin, which is a calcium channel blocker. Okay. Right. So you're okay there, but you got to go deeper. What is ISO what? Okay. And so it could be Nitrostat, NitroDur. These are all nitroglycerin, and that should stimulate a question like what Jay just said. Hey, are you having any more chest pain, or how often are you having to take this? Oh, I'm taking it two or three times a day, and yes, my chest is hurting.
This is
a immediate consult to their cardiologist or whoever is managing their angina.
You don't want to have a crisis in your office. Patient.
No, it's not worth it. Don't go for it. I mean, but you got to dig deep in that medical history right there, Jay.
You want to follow up every question and answer with another question until you have all the information you need to treat your patient safely. So if I have a patient who's taking Entadify or just they're on Cialis, what should I do?
Well, first of all, you're going to have to be able to talk to them and say, hey, look, we're going to be doing some, you know, invasive procedures next week. You know, they might be taking out one or two teeth or a root canal or some perio surgery or implants. I need to have you off this medication for 48 hours.
Right. Because that's how long it takes to be eliminated.
Correct.
Yeah.
Now, it might feel a little uncomfortable, but you can come back and say, listen, I need you off this drug in the event that we might have some type of medical emergency. Say, if you had chest pain during this procedure, I could give you a certain type of medication without causing a significant drop in blood pressure. Right. I just need you off of it 2 days before the procedure.
Yeah.
That's it.
We all make the assumption, you know, if they're taking an ED drug and their heart is healthy enough for sex, that the risk of them having angina in the office is low, but it's not zero. Especially if they're a smoker or if they're obese or they've got all kinds of different cardiovascular risks. You need to have your options open to be able to deal with medical emergencies. And, you know, there are two major ED drugs that are on, not counting tadalafil, or not counting Entify. And that's the tadalafil, which is Cialis, and sildenafil, which is Viagra. Those are the two that we need to be concerned with.
So, Jay, the bottom line is anything with afil, A-F-I-L, should trigger you to ask further questions because they are on a PDE5 inhibitor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is for erectile dysfunction or a combination drug like Entadify.
All right. Yep, exactly.
So now the other thing too, Jay, with these various medications, you got to dig deeper into your medical history. If by chance, like I'll go back to the angina, if they put CP, that should mean chest pain. Or if they do write down ED or put that on your health history, do you take any of the following drugs? Tadalafil, Vardenafil, Evenafil, or Sildenafil? Let them answer it for you. Then that can lead you into that question right there.
Yeah.
Because again, about 25 million men have ED.
Yep. It's pretty prevalent these days, especially as you get over 50.
So now get ready for this, Jay. Now, okay, so we're talking about ED drugs right here, all right? But for pulmonary hypertension, the PDE5 inhibitors are also used as well, too.
Yeah.
So this is where you got to be on your toes and know your medications. All right? We already told you about the afilafils, all right? If it's afil, A-F-I-L, you know that's a PDE5 inhibitor. But what about the drug they come in right now? Oh, I take Revatio. Oh, okay. What's that for? Oh, I have hypertension. Well, actually, Revatio is for pulmonary hypertension, and Revatio is the brand name of Sildenafil. Okay? Same thing with Adcirca. That's Tadalafil. And then another drug called Alyk, A-L-Y-K. That's also right. Tadalafil as well. So these are three other drugs you need to know in the event they come in your office. All right. Just because they're renamed something, they're going to have the same side effect if you give nitroglycerin to that patient.
Yeah. If you're not familiar with the name of the drug, look it up. Look it up. Well, let's talk about scenario where a patient does develop angina and they stop their ED drug a couple days before. How do we manage that? First thing we want to do is get the patient comfortable.
Comfortable.
And that's usually in a semi-upright position. Laying flat is not comfortable. No. Makes the patients very anxious. And put them on oxygen right away and start taking vital signs. And you're going to give them that first nitroglycerin, and you're going to give it about 5 minutes to work. And if it hasn't worked after 5 minutes,
it's time for another dose.
Then you're going to do it again.
Yes. Now, and also you need somebody documenting all of this.
Right.
Okay. All right. And if they're still sitting there and they've got as I've had patients tell me, it felt like an elephant was standing on their chest. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Because this could be the precursor to something far worse about to happen in your office.
Right. So
I do hope that you have called 911 by now.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, if they don't respond to another dose, a third dose after another 5 minutes, assume they're having a heart attack, and you're going to want to know.
Myocardial infarction is going on in your office right now.
And you're
going
to want to give those paramedics patients' vital signs along the way and let them know when they were dosed, because they need to know that information.
The other thing too, Jay, besides the three doses of nitro, if they haven't had any relief and we're assuming an MI is occurring, aspirin.
Yep.
You want to give them 481 milligram aspirins, chew and swallow if you don't have a 325.
Yeah.
Document what time you gave that too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. about nitroglycerin and the tablets. One thing you got to keep in mind with nitroglycerin, it's a very unstable compound, and that's why it's kept in a dark brown bottle.
Correct.
And you want to tightly seal that top. It's got a shelf life, a brand new bottle, of about 6 months. But if you open that bottle, it cuts it in half down to 3 months. So if you open a bottle of nitroglycerin for a patient, you need to note the date the bottle was opened and replace it in 3 months. You don't want to have a patient that comes in and has angina in your office and you give them a drug that doesn't work.
Or
you make sure the drug they give them works.
Do not give an expired drug. Please listen to us here. Do not let your emergency drugs ever become expired. And Jay, the other thing too, about with nitroglycerin tabs, it's about $8 to $10 for a bottle.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, all right. It's cheap.
Yeah, it's very cheap.
Yeah.
So you know, listeners out there, please pay attention to these erectile dysfunction drugs that can be disguised as other drugs out there.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to do an invasive procedure that could cause stress, that can lead to chest pain, you don't want to give nitro on those patients.
Right. Exactly. So a little follow-up on Aduhelm, remember from last month?
Yes.
So we talked about, this is a monoclonal antibody medication that's used for trying to slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease. And it basically has been shown to decrease the formation of amyloid plaques in the brain.
Correct. Okay?
But the studies have shown that just because you reduce the amount of amyloid or reduce the progression of amyloid, that doesn't mean that the Alzheimer's not going to progress. So that's one thing that it has going against it. And another thing is that it's associated, and we talked about this, with a fairly high incidence of brain bleeding, intracerebral bleeding and swelling. And the third thing about it is that it's expensive. And the drug company that makes it, Biogen, just cut the price of Aduhelm in half to try to increase their sales. So you know how much it is now? It went from $56,000 annually to $28,000.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a very expensive drug. And in fact, because of the lack of proof of actually working and because of the side effects, there are a number of prominent neurologists that are trying to get the drug recalled, that it's saying that it never should have been released. In fact, one of the people on this panel is someone who was on the committee that approved Aduhelm with the FDA, and he quit the panel in protest. And he's one of the experts that's saying, so it may disappear from the market before you know it.
But we'll have something else, Jay, just like our next episode coming up. I mean, we have a lot of medications to be discussing. I mean, a tremendous amount.
Yeah, just in the last week, we've got
some. Mean, I just couldn't get over how many have just come through already. It's just mind-boggling.
Yep.
So,
for sure.
Jay, we're looking at our next episode being January 6, 2022.
Actually, it should be the 13th because it's the second and fourth Thursdays of the month. So that would actually be the 13th.
That's correct. You know, I was thinking let's just do 2 weeks because I enjoy this so much. Yeah. I said,
mostly going to be every 2 weeks, but every once in a while, a little jump. Yeah,
because there's so much we can talk about. I mean, we could be here for another hour, 2 hours easy. Yeah. I just love sharing this information to our fellow dentists. I really do.
Speaking of next year, hopefully all of our viewers are aware of the fact that starting January 1st, paper prescriptions, written prescriptions, will no longer be honored by pharmacies. We have to do it all electronically. So if you haven't set up an e-prescription system for your office, you better do it quickly.
Yes.
And you're all set up, I'm guessing?
Yes.
Yeah, we finally got ours working last week after a month and a half to set it up. And, it's a little bit more work at first, but especially when you're prescribing a narcotic, and, I usually give patients tramadol as a backup after surgery. But for the most part, it doesn't take all that long. The big hassle is you have to ask the patient what pharmacy they want it transmitted to.
Yeah.
And we're sometimes spending a little time because our patients come from everywhere trying to find the pharmacy that they want to go to.
Oh, I know. That's right.
Yeah. So,
Jay, let's wrap it up. That's been a great show. It's been a great year. Looking forward to 2022. I wish everybody happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Yep.
Happy New Year. Excited. And happy New Year. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So we will see you after the first of the year, and thanks for tuning in. If you have any questions, I know there's a place for comments that you can on Facebook and on YouTube, which I don't see anybody asked anything, but you can always reach us if you have questions. You'll just go on to Facebook or YouTube, and I think you can ask questions and we'll be happy to answer them for you. So
there's some exciting things coming from the PharmaDocs in 2022. I promise you that. Very exciting. And
we'll let you know as we get closer.
Eventually. Yes.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.